Welcome to the Broadway Radio Show. I'm your host, David Levy. Twist. Today we are turning the tables on our usual host, who is today in the guest chair, Donald W. Feltham.
Hi. Yes, that's true. David, who has been on the show many, many times, agreed to play guest host because this is the 800th episode of the Broadway Woo-hoo! Radio Show. And as a way of celebrating, I thought that David could torture me, or I could torture myself.
Could both torture you, the listener.
I could torture the listener. So David agreed to be the guest host because what are we doing on this episode, David?
Donald Feltham, this is your just kidding. This is your 12 favorite show tunes.
Right. An assignment that I give to a lot of my guests who I've had people ask me in all the years that I've been doing this, you know, for me to do my 12 favorite show tunes, and I've never done it. And I decided for the 800th episode that we would do that. And all the guests always tell me it's not, they always are excited to do it. And then they come back and tell me, oh my God, this is so hard.
I find that when you talk about your favorites, there's this like intense pressure to get it right. So that it's not just about what you like, but like what's also, you know, great and representative and making a statement about not only your own joy, but also like what you think about the art form of musical theater. And I think that's probably not a helpful way to approach it.
Right. And it's really not. Plus, you know, it's sort of like, oh my God, I'm putting it down in writing and it's going to be recorded on a radio show. So it's going to live in perpetuity and I have to do it right. And there is no right. That's kind of the trick, is there is no right, because as most people who have done this will tell me, you know, it's a list that is a snapshot in time and it could change tomorrow or whatever. And so when I sat down to do it, I kind of kept a very open mind. And I've done it in the past just for fun to kind of figure out if I could do it over the years. And I think I did this maybe 10 or 12 years ago where I sat down.
Did you keep that list?
I went to look for it and I couldn't find it. Mm-hmm. But I thought I had it on my computer, but I didn't. I think I may have just actually manually written it on a pad of paper, and it's probably somewhere in my file cabinet, and I just couldn't find it. But I know some of the songs that were on there, and some of them are on this list that we're going to run through today. And it's interesting that when I sat down to do this list, the first two or three songs sort of came very easily. Ooh. And then I hit a massive roadblock, and I could not figure out what else to put on.
Now, did you try to set any kind of rubric for yourself? Were there categories that you wanted to make sure you included, or was it really just what the heart wants?
It was really just what the heart wants. I mean, it was in my mind, I was putting a little too much pressure on it because I was a little hung up on the definition of favorite. And what that really meant to me. So it was hard for me to get past that first three, four. And it was really hard to get past that small group at the beginning. And once I kind of eased up a little bit on that, I mean, I kind of put the list down for a few hours and then came back to it. And then once I started the next flow, then they just started coming out. And the trick was that once I hit like a specific composer or songwriting team, a whole bunch of those songs would come out. And then I'd think, and as I was writing those, I would suddenly think of, oh, I remember this other show from the exact same season. And what about something from that, which would then lead to another composer, which then, and so it sort of became this weird stream of consciousness list that one thing would lead to another. And I would then step back and look at the list and go, oh my God, everything is from the 30s, 40s, and 50s. I probably need to think more recent and kind of focus on that. And so then I would move the decades up to like the 80s, 90s, and the aughts, and kind of move closer and go through some of those. And then once I got a list of probably 30, I kind of went back and started really crossing some stuff out. People will notice I'm probably the first person who's ever done this on the show that doesn't have anything by Stephen Sondheim. And it's not,
what do you
like,
have against Sondheim?
I have nothing against Sondheim. There were some Sondheim songs.
It felt like pissing on
there.
His grave, huh?
Yeah, I know. There were Sondheim songs on the list, but for some reason, when I went to cut stuff out, I couldn't, because for me, Sondheim, I tend to think of in sense of scores and not individual songs. And I love A Little Night Music. I love Sweeney Todd. I love Company. But I always think of them in their entirety. And for me, pulling out one song from a Sondheim score just didn't work to pull just one song out for some weird reason. So when I was whittling things down to 12, the Sondheim songs kind of moved down the list and they just didn't make it. So I think people will find it's a very odd list. There's some weird things on here, I think. And there's some very typical things. I don't know that any of the stuff has ever been on any other people's lists before.
Oh, I'm sure a couple really? Of these songs have been.
Maybe. I don't. Anyway, it's kind of an odd list. People will kind of question why I pick some of these things. I don't know what.
Don't worry. That's what I'm here to do.
I'm sure you're going to ask me some questions, but I guess we should get started.
Yeah, and I think we should start by pointing out that you absolutely cheated because your first choice is actually two songs in medley.
Well, sort of, but it's still one. It's one number from a show, and it is always performed this way.
I did bring 13 songs to my 12 favorite show.
Oh, you did. Okay.
Recording, so I am the last person to throw stones here. But why don't you tell us about what that song is?
It's "Light a Rose." Will I Ever Tell You from The Music Man. And this one has always been on the list, and this one is really just, it isn't because I think it's a fantastic show tune. It's because it sort of is the beginning of my love of musical theater, and it's always held a special place for me. Cause this is one of those nostalgic picks for me. When I started performing as a kid, I first got involved in theater when I was 8 years old. Kind of helping. My mom was involved in local theater and I kind of got dragged in because it was something that it was interesting to me. So I kind of got involved. I started performing at a young age doing children's theater. And then eventually at age 10, I graduated to actually doing big full musicals, big production musicals. And the first big musical I did was Music Man. And I was not Winthrop. I was the Winthrop understudy. And there were many moments where you're sitting in the wings waiting to go on. And one of those moments was this moment in the show. So every single performance, I would be sitting in the wings waiting for an entrance. Cause I think it's right before the footbridge chase scene. Mm. And I would be sitting there mesmerized watching this particular song because it's Mary and the Librarian and then on one side of the stage and then the barbershop quartet / guys, the men from the town doing the two different songs that blend into each other. And they, the production I was in, they staged it just like the movie, which I think was much like the stage show in the sense that they were on opposite sides of the stage with spotlights on each of them. And for me, I still remember that sitting on the floor in the wings, watching it and just being absolutely mesmerized by the magic on stage of the staging with the spotlights and the songs and the way the songs blended together. And that was the moment that I fell in love with musical theater at age 10. So that's why this song has always been on my list, because it's really where this all started. I wouldn't be doing the Broadway radio show this many years later and 800 episodes later if it was not for this moment in a musical. So we're going to hear from the original Broadway cast recording, Barbara Cook and the Buffalo Bills from The Music Man.
Light a rose, I'm home again, rose, to get the sun back in the sky. Light a rose, I'm home again, rose, about 1,000 kisses shy. Ding dong, ding, I can hear the chapel bell chime. Ding dong, ding, at the least suggestion, I'll pop the question. Light a rose, I'm home again, rose, without a sweetheart to my name. Light a rose, how everyone knows that I am hoping you're the same. mine, light a rose, oh, light a rose, oh, light a rose. Dream of now, dream of then, dream of a love soon that might have been. Do I love you?
The next song is the reason why I'm pretty sure this is one that has appeared on other people's lists. Because I know, for example, it's one of Bruce Kimmel's favorite show tunes.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. Very much so. And I'm sure it's many other people's favorites as well. So why don't you tell us what it is?
It's the only Rodgers and Hammerstein.
But not the only Richard Rodgers.
And not the only Oscar Hammerstein. But they're not together. It's the only Rodgers and Hammerstein show, but it's not one of the expected ones. It's Flower Drum Song, which most people don't really appreciate that much. I happen to like Flower Drum Song, and it is Love Look Away, which is probably the weirdest song from that show, because...
How so?
Well, only because if you think about it, one of the reasons I remember, the reason this song has always stuck with me is because I saw a production of this show. Again, at the theater I grew up doing big musicals at, I was not in Flower Drum Song, but I saw this production many times, is because this song kind of really sticks out in the show because the score for Flower Drum Song is relatively, it's full of comedy songs and nightclub songs and kind of even the love songs or stuff are kind of sappy, sentimentally kind of songs. Like I'm going to like it here. And I mean, all these... 100 Million Miracles, there are all these kind of lightweight type songs. And then you get this heavy Love Look Away song, which is wedged right in between Grant Avenue and Fantan Fanny in the show. And it's not sung by one of the main characters. It's sung by Helen Chow, who is sort of a, I wouldn't even call her a secondary character. She's sort of a third tier character in the show who gets this like incredibly forlorn, unrequited love ballad in the middle of the show that is just, it's so odd. First off, it's a wonderful song because it really beautifully captures kind of the despair and loneliness of someone who has never been able to find love. And it's just such a very odd, dark moment in the show. In the original source novel for Flower Drum Song, the character of Helen Chow actually commits suicide after this moment. And I know Oscar Hammerstein, they basically eliminated that from the libretto, but there's still hints of it in the show, because even as a kid, if I remember correctly, Helen Chow doesn't reappear after that song. I mean, she's not in the show anymore. And there's always kind of that weird subtext that she's killed herself. You don't see her do it, but she disappears. She sort of fits, and it's kind of weird if you look back at it now, but she sort of fits the Judd Fry role.
I was thinking that in many ways, this is the lonely room of
Flower Drum Song. It is. And it's sort of, but at the same time, Flower Drum Song doesn't kind of have the dark side of Oklahoma in it. You know what I mean? It's sort of like Helen Chow is not set up as a villain like Judd Fry. She's just sort of in the way. She's just sort of in the way, and she's not bad. she's just
a victim of circumstance.
She's a victim of circumstance. And it's sort of, that's why the song has always stuck with me. Plus the fact it's such a gorgeous song. So it's sort of one of these gorgeous songs that's become a standard that is a real oddball in its original score, which is why it's always stood out to me. And that's why it's always been kind of on my list. It's one of those ones that's always stuck with me in the Rodgers and Hammerstein canon. Love Look Away has always been one of those ones that I've always really, really been drawn to. So we're going to hear it. We're going to hear Arabella Hong from the original Broadway cast recording of Flower Drum Song.
From me, fly when you pass my door.
All right, so you teased that there would be a second Oscar Hammerstein song, but not one that he wrote with Richard Rodgers. And I think people will be surprised to learn that it's also not one that he wrote with Jerome Kern. So why don't you tell us about this choice?
Did this one surprise you when you saw this on the list?
Well, you told me to expect some operetta. And yeah. I think when we did one of our operetta episodes together, you mentioned that you really liked this song. So it wasn't a total shock.
Right. Well, and as I said at the beginning, when I was putting together the list, there has always been a handful of songs that have always been on my 12 favorites. And this is one of them, interestingly enough. This isn't one that just kind of came out of the blue. This has always been in my list, like my handful of, you know, three or four favorites. And I don't even have an explanation for it. Huh. I've never been a big operetta fan. Although, as you hear the rest of this list,
you wouldn't know based on this list.
I've never really been a big operetta fan. In other words, to sit down and listen to an entire operetta score. But the first time I heard the song, and I'm not going to lie, the first time I heard the song was actually the recording that we're listening to.
I was going to ask if that was why you chose this.
Yeah, recording. This recording was the first time I heard this song. And it was not. Obviously, I'm not as old as this recording, but it was when this recording, I think, first came out on CD, and I had finally sat down to listen to it. And I had never listened. It's from The New Moon. It's actually called Softly As in the Morning Sunrise. And it's from a 1953 studio cast recording. And I had never actually listened to the score of The New Moon until this came out on CD, and immediately fell in love with the song and did not even know at the time that the song, as you will see when you hear it, as you will understand when you hear it, in the time since the show was originally written, the song has become a standard. I mean, it's been covered by a lot of different artists and a lot of different genres. I mean, it's been adapted to a lot of different styles, right, David? I mean, you've heard
there was a popular doo-wop version of it, which is hilarious to me.
Yeah, I mean, it's once you hear it, you'll kind of go, oh yeah, I can kind of see how this song could be really reinterpreted a lot of different ways. One of the things I like about it is I like the style of it. I like Romberg's melody. I like Hammerstein's lyrics. I'm a big lyric person. So for me, the things that either attract me are, I really love clever lyrics. As you're going to hear,
which is why we're going to have some Tim Rice coming up.
That's a totally different thing, but I really like Lorenz Hart. And we're going to have a couple of Lorenz Hart songs. And I really like clever lyrics. But I also like a lot of lyrics that have a lot of imagery in it. And this song, Hammerstein does a lot of imagery with this particular song. He's constantly referring to the way love comes upon you as morning sunrise, evening sunset. And there's a lot of really beautiful imagery. But it's also very simple. And I like songs that have a lot to them, but they're also very simple. They're not overly complicated and the lyrics are not overworking. They're just very simple and straightforward. So you can really grasp what they're trying to tell you. I don't know what it is about this song, but it's the one operetta song that I have always, always loved. And that for some weird reason, I've always been attracted to this version, probably because it's the first version of the song I heard.
Well, it is a beautiful song. And I think if listeners have not heard it before listening to it now, they will understand how it quickly became a favorite of yours. So why don't we go ahead and listen to Softly As in a Morning Sunrise from The New Moon, performed by Thomas Hayward.
Love came to me gay and tender. Love came to me, sweet surrender. Love came to me in bright romantic splendor. Fickle was she, faithful never. Fickle was she, and clever, so will it be forever, forever. As in a morning sunrise, the light of love comes stealing into a newborn day. Oh, flaming with all the glow of sunrise, burning kiss is sealing the vow that I'll betray. For the passions that thrill love and lift you high to heaven are the passions that kill love and let you fall to hell. So ends its story softly as in an evening sunset. The light that gave you glory will take it all. The passions that thrill love and lift you high to heaven are the passions that kill love and let you fall to hell. So it is sorry, softly as in an evening sunset. The light that gave you glory will take it all away.
All right, so we're going to move on from operetta to, well, Donald and I have a disagreement about whether this well, is mock really operetta or neo operetta, but right. Either way, it is we're jumping ahead to the late 70s with on the 20th century.
Right.
And this is one of the songs when I read this list, I was like, I know this show. I've seen this show. The song title is not triggering anything in my brain to remember what song this is. And then once I played it, I was like, oh, it's the overture, which is not obviously the overture has a lot of songs in it, but right. It is the first theme you hear in the overture, and that suddenly made it click as to why this might be a song that you chose. So why don't you tell us about it?
Yeah, well, as David and I were discussing before we started the show, because he was saying you have an awful lot of operetta on this list, I said, well, it's not really operetta, but because operetta itself is sort of mock opera in a sense, and to me, on the 20th century is sort of one step removed from that, because it's sort of a spoof on operettas in a way, but it's a very much in the operetta style. Right?
Yeah, so I agree to disagree. I think that if you put on the 20th century on stage in 1930, people would feel very much
it was
at
an
home.
Operetta. Yeah. Yeah. And it's, of course, on the 20th century is got a score by Cy Coleman and Betty Comden and A.D.F. Green doing the lyrics. And I picked I've Got It All, done by Madeline Kahn and John Cullum, which is basically, I almost put this in my notes, but it's not really true, but it's sort of like their version of Anything You Can Do, I Can Do Better from Annie Get Your Gun, because it's sort of a competition song between these two people who absolutely despise each other. And what I love about it is, well, first off, Cy Coleman, what I love about the entire score of On the 20th Century is you've got Cy Coleman, who is one of my favorite Broadway composers, because he's probably one of the most versatile Broadway composers of all time. He came from the world of, he's a fantastic jazz musician to begin with. But if you look at the musicals he did in his career on Broadway, the range of styles is just unbelievable what he was able to do, from City of Angels to Will Rogers Follies to Sweet Charity to On the 20th Century, which is operetta. And then to team him with Comden and Green, who are the masters of lyric writing. And then you throw on top of that, you've got two like over-the-top performers like John Cullum and Madeline Kahn playing two larger-than-life characters like Lily Garland, a movie star, and Broadway producer Oscar Jaffe. And you put them all together in one song where they are trying to outdo each other. I've Got It All, which always makes me laugh, because the lyrics are so smart and so funny. And you can, even if you are just listening to the recording and not even seeing it on stage, you can visualize John Coleman and Madeline Kahn absolutely going at each other in the song on stage. And it's just a blast to listen to. It just makes me laugh every time to hear the vocal inflections. They're so both so funny in the song that it's always just a song I love to listen to.
And, you know, it reminds me a lot of something you might find in Candide, in that the music is not dumbed down. Like, you might say that this is mock operetta, but this is a very ambitious composition. Mm-hmm. Certainly what it asked Madeline Kahn to do is incredibly impressive, but also what it asked the orchestra to do is really dazzling. And, you know, I know you say you're attracted to the lyrics, but to me, this is really just an incredible piece of music on its own.
Right. No, I agree. I think one of the surprises, it showed Cy Coleman's ability to really break beyond what people thought he could do. Because he had done at this point, I think he had done Sweet Charity and Seesaw and I Love My Wife. And then he suddenly shows up with this operetta piece. And all, as people know, I mean, because you ask people to list their favorite overtures, and On the 20th Century almost always ends up on people's lists because it's just spectacular overture. And you would never, ever have thought something like that would come from Cy Coleman.
Yeah.
Just not something you would think. But I love it. And of course, how can you not love Madeline Kahn and John Coleman? Two absolute greats. Even though Madeline didn't stick with the show very long, but still.
But at least we got the recording.
So let's hear them right now.
My life is simply great. My silverware is gold. Through my Bel Air estate, champagne's a flowing river. Next to my Rolls Royce, a Cadillac's a flavor. I'm in clover, and my cup, it runneth over. I have put my footprints in the wet concrete. My hometown now has a Lily Garland street. I am mobbed by fans who faint and shriek my name. The price of fame. Look at you and me, the sweetest story told. I'm high as I can be. You're lying in an alley. Drillby found her voice. She doesn't need Svengali. You've got nothing and I've got it all. Forgive my lack of tact, but here's the basic fact. You've got nothing and I've got it all.
Are you finished?
No, you are. Chauffeur, butler, cook.
You're spoiled.
They're foreign and they're old.
Your reputation soiled. A billion shop girls ape you. Nightly nationwide. A billion farmhands rape you.
Please stop trying. What you'd like to sell me, I'm not buying. Don't come at me with a contract. I will not sign any contract.
Contract, contract. Who said contract? Did you hear me mention contract? I came here with a dream we shared once long ago. Two hearts with one grand scheme.
Don't you know when something is over?
This was a professional dream. A role that you were made for. A role, a chance to play that Bernhardt would have paid for.
Save your breath. Don't even try. Back again with you.
Perhaps it's just as well. I've seen you on the screen. On stage you wove a spell. With each new play it deepened. But now your art is gone. It's coarsened and it's cheapened. Since you rolled out. Since you sold out to cheap Hollywood. Cheesy, sleazy Hollywood. Pitiful, cityful of celluloid slime.
You're just jealous.
A Germ infested, vermin infested, home of freaks and sheiks and geeks and celluloid crime.
Sour grapes.
Playing foolish parts, every part the same. Morons who direct, crucify your name. Lily on display, just a bargain sale. Lily, face the truth. Lily, you've gone stale.
Stale?
Another stale cheap dolly from Cheap Cheap Polly.
My life is simply great. My silverware is gold. Through my Bel Air estate, champagne's a flowing river. Look at my Rolls Royce.
Poor Lily, you've gone stale.
The movie public's choice.
That's not the holy grail.
All the biggest names in town are begging to be asked to dinner.
Give them all a year or so, they'll drop you for the latest weather.
Did it by myself.
Keep your tainted.
Got there by myself.
Landed on the show.
Never needed
Lily, you are through. You're a loser.
Stop your trying, I'm not buying.
Tragic story, lost your glory.
Some spend galley in an alley.
Shop girls ape you, farmhands rake you.
I've got it.
You've lost it.
I've got it.
You've lost it.
I've got it.
You've lost it.
I've got it.
You've lost it. Cheap Hollywood.
I've got it. Cheap
Hollywood. You've lost it.
I've got it.
All right, so we're going from one kind of mock operetta with On the 20th Century to a different kind of mock operetta,
right?
With chess,
right? Which is why I lined these up in this order on purpose. We've got the New Moon, we've got On the 20th Century, and then we've got chess.
So
because they are all
the,
similar.
Before we talk about the specific song,
yeah,
I need you to talk about your relationship to chess, because I find that everyone has sort of a different approach to it, and that has a lot to do with how they feel about the score, the songs, the recordings. What's your chess deal?
It's so hard to talk about chess because so much, like you said, so many people have so many different opinions about the show. I have seen so many productions of the show.
That says something.
Right. And I don't necessarily mean I've seen so many, it's like saying I've seen so many productions of Guys and Dolls. The difference would be if you'd seen so many productions of Guys and Dolls, but they were all different.
Right.
Meaning they all had different books.
And different sets of songs.
And different sets of
characters
songs.
Singing them.
Right. And different settings and different, the show orders were all different. I mean, chess is such a complicated show. I personally think, and I know a lot of people don't agree, I think it's in its original form, meaning the studio cast recording / original London production, I think the score is really beautiful. I really like the score a lot, the way it was originally performed. I think, which is why I focused on the song I picked, because that is from the original London / studio production. I think it got a little bit mangled when it moved to Broadway.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have a problem with the addition of someone else's story. I think it's a beautiful song. It's a little clunky, but it's a nice song. I think the problem everybody has is that the book never has worked. It's a bit of a soap opera melodrama, but in reality, it's a pop rock opera is what it is. Its time period in the history of musical theater is it kind of the tail end of the British rock opera period, where you had late 80s, where you had Phantom and you had Les Mis and you had Chess, and having books like that is not that unusual for kind of standard operas, where you didn't necessarily, you had, the books are not that complicated, and this book is not that complicated, really. It's basically a Cold War love story, you know, with the central focus being a Russia versus US chess match. And no one's been able to really get a handle on the book, and that's been part of the problem. And they've been messing with it and messing with it and messing with it. There's a lot of recordings of the show. A couple very good recordings, the original London studio recording, and I think it's the Danish cast recording is also very good, because it's all in English. And it also, it also, it's actually the closest one to match the actual London production. Mm. In other words, it restores some of the stuff from the London production that's not on the studio cast recording. So it's the closest one that matches the London production. So
when it comes to this song specifically,
right. I wanted to pick something from Chess because to tell the story backwards is when I was a kid, I was very heavily involved in musical theater. Mm-hmm. And as I got to be a teen and in high school and stuff like that, I wasn't really buying. It's so funny because I had two separate lives. I was very heavily involved in theater, but the other side of my life as a high school kid was I was buying records and stuff, but I wasn't buying cast recordings. Hmm. I was buying, I remember the first album I bought. I remember the first, but they weren't musical theater albums.
What were they?
The very first album I bought with my own money was Heart Like a Wheel by Linda Ronstadt. So, and I liked Linda Ronstadt. I liked the Eagles.
Speaking of operetta.
Yeah, I liked, I didn't buy Pirates of Penzance. So I had a foot in both worlds. But it wasn't until kind of the 80s that I really started buying a lot of cast recordings. And I distinctly remember going to the store and buying Phantom of the Opera, Les Mis, and Chess. Mm. And I knew much of Phantom and Les Mis. I didn't, other than One Night in Bangkok, I didn't know any of the music from Chess. But I had heard of Chess. So I bought all three of them at a record store in my neighborhood and took them home and listened. And I fell in love with Chess. I just absolutely fell in love with it. I loved the sweep of it. And it is, as originally written, it does have the sweep of an opera. It has the feel of an opera. The opening song, Murano, is totally opera.
But I would argue that the song that you've chosen, which I think we should say now is Mountain Duet.
It's Mountain Duet, yeah.
Is also like among the more operetta-ish songs of the score.
And that's kind of why I picked it. Because
it's also one of the most like book heavy
songs of the score. It's very book driven, yes. That's why one of the reasons I picked it was it's to me a nice example in the book, in the score, because it's one of the ones that kind of pays homage to opera, but also reveals its modern sensibilities as well, because it's a very narrative song in the sense that it is very plot driven. It's not a stuck in pop song, because there's a lot of stuck in pop songs in this,
which are my favorite songs from Chess.
Like Nobody's Side, Heaven Help My Heart, One Night in Bangkok. This is a much more narrative musical theater driven song that the first 2 minutes of the song, I've had the structure of the song really interesting, because the first 2 minutes are internal monologues by Anatoly and Florence, who mm-hmm. are basically opponents at this point, because she's on the American team and this is the Russian player, and they're having a meeting, and they're supposed to be meeting with the American player, but he doesn't show up. And the first 2 minutes of the song are the orchestrations and music are very operetta-ish. They're very fully orchestrated sounding, and you're hearing their internal thoughts, and they are kind of sizing each other up. But then suddenly at the 2 minute mark, you get a blast of electric guitar, which then plays a little bit of the melody of Nobody's Side,
which we've already heard earlier in the show,
and it suddenly turns into a dialogue. At that moment, when the electric guitar breaks that moment, it becomes a dialogue between the two characters. And then the rest of the song remains a dialogue, and it has a lot of peaks and valleys, like the fact that they're on a mountain. And that's why I picked it. I think it's the one song on the show that kind of reveals its roots in the style of opera, but also mm-hmm. its rock roots that come from Benny and Bjorn and Tim Rice.
You could say that it's the song that sort of best achieves the ambitions of what Chess sets out to be.
Right. And that's why I picked it. And plus, I really, it was for me the first time I had ever heard Elaine Page.
Oh, wow.
I had never heard of Elaine Page then. I'd never heard the original London Evita recording at that point. And her vocals in this are breathtaking. I mean, Jab's absolutely gorgeous singing on this album. And in this song, especially the way she blends with Tommy Korberg, who was the original Anatoly in London, is fantastic. The way they sing together is so wonderful. And that's why I picked the song. Is it the best song from the score? Probably not, but I think it encapsulates, like you said, what chess really is in terms of the way it blends styles and what it really is trying to be.
And we're not here to listen to best songs. We're here to listen to favorite songs.
Right. And that's why it's always been one of my favorites. And when they tried to do it in the Broadway production, they completely fucked it up. They like changed all the lyrics. They changed the entire concept and it sucked on Broadway. So the Mountain Duet on the Broadway recording is terrible. It's way better on this recording. So there you have
it. Well, let's hear it.
This is the one situation I wanted most to avoid. Nothing I say will convince him it isn't a trick.
A drink on a clear moonlit night, I relax, she smiles. There's something unpleasant going on.
So with immaculate timing, I'm left to carry the can. Embarrassed, outnumbered, marooned.
Now she can't be working for them, I mean us. She seems so very straightforward, but where is he?
He has to come back. He wanted this meeting. Well, didn't he?
Maybe he's scared, just as scared as he was in the game.
His career, I know I've done my best.
Well, at least she's a good-looking spy.
What if my Russian friend thinks that my plans are more than intimate kind? If I don't say something else soon, he'll go. Nobody's a normal.
In this idyllic, well-produced scene,
all I can say is moments ago, he was right here, ready and waiting.
Never mind him, I haven't missed him so far.
Maybe it won't do any harm to struggle on without his charm. Funny how all at once I feel that she can go jump off the mountain. I'm okay.
This is the one situation I wanted most to avoid.
My dear opponent, I really can't imagine why.
So I am not dangerous then, what a shame.
No, you're not dangerous, who could think that of you?
You are so strange, why can't you be what you ought to be? You should be scheming, intriguing, too clever by half.
I have to hand it to you, for you managed to make me forget why I ever agreed to this farce.
I don't know why I can't think of anything. Then be wasting my time.
Right, that was Mountain Duet from Chess, performed by Elaine Page and Tommy Korberg. And now we are going in a totally different direction, a different era, not even a cast recording.
Yeah.
So talk to me about this. What is the thinking here?
Well, this one is another one of those ones that's always been on my list. I'm a huge Rodgers and Hart fan. They're probably my favorite songwriting team. I always say Richard Rodgers is probably my favorite Broadway composer.
Hard to argue with that.
It's hard to argue with that. And I like his work with Lorenz Hart. I just do, because I think Lorenz Hart is one of the smartest. He can be funny. He gets romance. He gets love. He gets.
I think lost. his sad songs are better than anyone else's.
Absolutely agree. And they're so heartbreaking sometimes. But what I like about him is the economy of his lyrics. They're so direct and to the point, and he knows exactly the right words to pick to get for the listener to latch right onto them. I mean, he just does. And none of the lyrics are, like I said earlier, nothing is overworked. He knows exactly the economy of a good lyric. And so for this one, I picked I Could Write a Book from Pal Joey. I love the score. And I've always liked this one. Again, it's the imagery. I loved the book thing. The version I picked is I didn't pick one from a cast recording. Because I know I didn't have to. I always tell people you don't have to pick cast recording. Because I like the cast recording ones, and I like to stick to cast recordings if I can. But if you're going to go for Rodgers and Hart outside of a cast recording, you can't do any better than Ella Fitzgerald, because she did two volumes of Rodgers and Hart songbooks. Plus the fact I like that she does the complete version of this song with the intro, because not everybody does the entire intro. So she does the complete intro. And I also like this because I was a big fan of Elvis Costello in later years, because as I said, I have a foot in both camps as I grew up. And in the late 80s, I think it was 87, Elvis Costello had a hit song called Every Day I Write the Book. And I dare you to listen to that song and not say that he was not influenced by I Could Write a Book by Rodgers and Hart. It's very similar concept of writing a book about this woman. And he doesn't steal anything, but it's just the whole concept is very similar to the song. So it's always on my list. So we're going to hear from Pal Joey. We're going to hear Ella Fitzgerald singing I Could Write a Book.
A, B, C, D, E, F, G, I never learned to spell, at least not well. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, I never learned to count a great amount. But my busy mind is burning to use what learning I've got. I won't waste any time. I'll strike while the iron is hot. If they asked me, I could write a book about the way you walk and whisper. Just to tell them that I love you aloud. And the world discovers as my book ends how to make two lovers a friend.
Thank you.
plot is just to tell them that I love you a lot, and the world discovers as my book ends how to make two lovers a friend.
So the next song was probably, to me, the most delightful surprise of your list, because it is a song that I adore, but feel like no one ever really pays attention to.
Thank you.
And I'm just going to tell people it is Fair Warning from Dusty Rides Again by Harold Rowe, performed by one of my favorites, Dolores Gray. Where did this come from for you?
Okay. This is sort of, I agree with you. This is sort of my guilty pleasure on this. Where to start? A friend of mine who I did theater with for many years introduced me to Harold Rome. And I was not that familiar with his work as a Broadway songwriter, composer. But he did like Fanny and Wish You Were Here and Destry Rides Again and I Can Get It For You Wholesale. He was a successful Broadway. He had a lot of shows on Broadway, and they were, none of them were like gigantic, you know, over 1,000 performance runs, but they were all,
well, Pins and Needles ran.
But because in the late 30s and the early 40s, he had like some really great review shows that ran. But then later on, he did more book musicals, and they were moderate successes, and they generated some popular songs. But he's so forgotten. He introduced me to Destry Rides Again. And thus he introduced me to Dolores Gray, because I had never even heard Dolores Gray at that point. Mm-hmm. He also took me, this is all kind of all linked together, he also took me at that time to see Dolores Gray in concert.
Oh, wow.
And she played the Cinegrill in Hollywood at the Roosevelt Hotel, which was right after she had finished doing Carlotta in Follies in London.
I can't imagine seeing her in a room that small.
Yes, because you had been to the Cinegrill in Hollywood.
Yes.
She performed there without a microphone.
Wow.
Because she did not need to have a microphone, because it was a small, intimate cabaret space, and she did the entire show without a microphone, and she was unbelievable. And I immediately fell in love with Dolores Gray. And as you said, what I love about this song is it is so 1950s Broadway. It is... First off, one of the things I love about it is I love the continuous tempo changes throughout the song. I love the way it lets Dolores Gray show off her vocals, because she has to, she goes from quiet and soft to belting to modulating, and she's doing all sorts of stuff in the song. It's crazy. And the song has this kind of, at the beginning, it starts off kind of slow, but then gets this kind of driving rhythm going that sounds like galloping horses, which makes sense because it's a Western musical. But then by the end, you've got bongo drums, which doesn't make any sense for a Western musical.
But it makes sense for a 1950s Broadway musical.
Right, exactly. And throughout it all, you've got Dolores Gray belting her face off throughout up and down throughout the song. And it's always stuck with me because it was my introduction to Dolores Gray and to Harold Rome. And I just love the song, and I wish more people knew about Harold Rome and knew about Destry Rides Again.
Well, there's a pretty high profile revival of I Can Get It For You Wholesale coming to New York, off Broadway this fall, which I know both you and I are seeing.
I'm seeing it too.
That will help.
Based on the people connected with this, I think they've got hopes for this thing, because there's a lot of big people connected with this little revival, a classic stage company. It's impressive.
I'm optimistic.
Yeah. And like you said, I'm glad you were surprised to see this on the list, because it's such a fun song. And she is so good in this number.
Yeah. You know, about 25 years ago, who knows what the label was called at the time. I think it was still MCA, released a box set called Front Row Center.
Yeah, highlighting, I have it.
The history of all the different labels that became Universal Music Group. Mm-hmm. So, Decca and Cap and MCA and Universal in. And this song is on that set. And I think this was before Dust Your Eyes Again had been released on CD. So this, that was my first exposure to this song. And maybe to Dolores Gray, although I think maybe the That's Entertainment soundtrack came first for me. But and ever since, I've been in love with the song and with her, and such a treat. Do you know that this song was cut from the show when they brought it to London?
I know. It's not.
I don't understand it.
I know. But there is another. There, you mean the Jill Gascoigne one?
There's that
Jill Gascoigne small production.
Alfred Molina one.
Yeah. But there's another London cast recording.
There's a studio cast album.
Studio cast album, which actually has these.
Yes, and I do have that as well.
I have that. I do too.
We're complete. Shout out to Stage Door Records. I have all series.
We're probably two of the only people who have all three cast recordings of Dusty Rides Again.
There's also a great jazz recording of it.
Is there really?
That. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, let's talk after the show.
let's listen to Fair Warning.
You're in for a treat, people.
I might as well tell you before we begin. You're playing a gamble that you'll never win. I give you fair warning, please keep it in mind. Friend, try to remember that I'm not the kind to care for ties that bind. Sooner or later I leave them far behind. When fickle fancy calls me that I've got to go, my heart's as free as any silver clouds that blow. No earthly use in holding me, for now you know. Fair warning, fair warning. When fickle fancy tells me time to travel on, I'll be a memory before you know I'm gone. You'll find I'm not the kind to build your hopes upon. Fair warning, fair warning. I'm free, free, free as the evening breeze, changeable as the sky. I go, go, go when and where I please, never there to say goodbye. Good Lord made me with an ever-roving heart. I never linger till love's magic falls apart. I'll trade November's embers for an April start, and maybe stay till May, till fickle fancy calls me away. Fair warning. When my heart tells me go, I've got to go. I'm built that way. Get that wandering yen, that urge again. I'm built that way. Fresh fields beyond the hills with open arms are beckoning. I can't stay for the reckoning. Goodbye, so long, good day. Good Lord made me with an ever-roving heart. I never linger till love's magic falls apart. I'll trade November's embers for an April start, and maybe stay till May, till fickle fancy calls me away. Fair warning, fair warning, fair warning, fair warning.
All right, that was Dolores Gray singing Harold Rome's Fair Warning from Destry Rides Again. We're going to stay in the West for a little bit, although I guess maybe a little more Midwest, but certainly with a composer who is very identified with country and Western. This, too, was a delightful surprise for me. I don't know if you know this, but what the Music Man is for you, Big River is for me.
Oh,
that was the first show that I ever saw a national tour of, and I had the cast album, I had the libretto, I had the sheet music. I was obsessed. So I was very pleased to see that you chose a song from that score. And why don't you tell us which song and why you chose it?
I chose Leavin's Not the Only Way to Go from Big River, written by Roger Miller. And I picked it for several reasons. One, I wanted to focus on some more modern shows because everything I was picking, I mean, Chess is the 1980s also. Oh,
so modern, the 1980s. So modern,
I know. Well, you know, what can I say? Well, one, I really like the score for Big River. I know a lot of people kind of dismiss it because, you know,
those people can go to hell.
Right. Well, a lot of people are sort of like, oh, well, it only won Best Musical in 1985 because it was the only show that was nominated that was any good. And I'm sort of like, you know what? In any other season, it probably would have been a strong contender because it's actually a good show.
And remember, it had a very successful Broadway revival.
It ran over 1,000 performances in its first run. So it was a successful show and it's a good show. I picked this song for several reasons. One, I had worked actually at the theater I grew up doing musicals at. I had actually worked with Patty Konauer.
Oh, wow.
She was our Sarah Brown in Guys and Dolls before she headed to New York. And she's absolutely as sweet as could be, and wonderful, and voice to die for. Absolutely amazing, amazing soprano. But one of the things I like about the song is musical trios are very tricky to make work. And I like the way that this one works. I like the way it's structured. I like that it's Huck. And then Patty joins in, and then Ron Richardson joins in. And then it goes back to just Huck at the end. And I like what it's saying. I like the lyrics a lot. And the more selfish reason I like the song is that when Big River came out in 1985, I hate to admit, I was 24 years old. And the role of Huck sat perfectly in my vocal range. And I was dying to play Huck, absolutely dying to play Huck. I sang along to this score so much. I swear to God, if this comes up on, if I got SiriusXM on in the car and it comes on, I can sing any of Huck's songs without even having the sheet music in front of me. I know every single key, note, lyric, everything, because it's so ingrained into my head. And when I was playing these, as I was trying to put together the show, and I played this track, I could sing along to all of Huck's part in this song without even seeing the lyrics. I knew all the lyrics completely. So I still sound pretty close to the way I sounded back then. But it's one of my favorite songs in the show.
And I think this is not the first time that you and I have played the song on the Broadway radio show, because it's been covered a number of times by a lot of country music royalty, Merle Haggard, Glenn Campbell, Roger Miller himself has recorded it. So, you know, I think that sometimes we tend to think that the only standards that come from Broadway are the ones that Frank Sinatra sang, but that's still happening. It's still happening from shows that sometimes Broadway purists thumb their noses at. And to them, I thumb my nose right back.
Well, I think I had forgotten that Big River was your first big show. So,
oh, yeah,
I'm glad I remembered to include something from it on this list.
All right. Let's listen to Leavin's Not the Only Way to Go from Big River.
Did the morning come too early? Was the night not long enough? Does a tear of hesitation fall on everything you touch? Well, it might just be a lesson for the hasty heart to know. Maybe leaving's not the only way to go.
Maybe lay and let your feelings grow accustomed to the dark, and by morning's light you just might solve the problems of the heart. And it all might be a lesson for the hasty heart to know. Maybe leaving's not the only way to go.
Yeah. people reach new understandings all the time. They take a second look, maybe change their minds. People reach new understandings every day. Tell me not to reach,
and I'll go away. Does a tear of hesitation fall on everything you touch?
But it might just be a lesson for a hasty heart to know.
Maybe leaving's not the only way to go. And a heart without a home is such a lonesome road to hoe. Maybe leaving's not the only way to go.
All right, that was Daniel Jenkins, Patty Konauer, and Ron Richardson singing Leaving's Not the Only Way to Go by Roger Miller from Big River. And now we are diving a little bit back into the operetta pool. And this is the song of everything on your list where I was like, I have seen this show two times. I do not remember this song. I need to go listen to the album to figure out why you picked it. I have listened to the album.
And you still don't know why.
I'm not sure why you picked it. So tell us about it.
It is from the score of A Gentleman's Guide to Love and Murder, which is not an old show, obviously. It's a more recent show. And I picked the song Inside Out. The score, by the way, is by Steven Lutback and Robert L. Friedman. And it's, I love the show. I think it's really funny, silly. I like the score a lot. It's a real pastiche of a lot of musical styles. This particular song is very operetta, in style. And one of the reasons I like it is so many of the songs in the score are really funny because they're showcases for Jefferson Mays to be funny and for Bryce Pinkham to be funny and for Lisa O'Hare, who plays Sabella, to be really funny. Cause there's a lot of slapsticky stuff in the show and sight gags, and the songs kind of go along with that. This is a little bit more of a tender moment, a little bit less humorous moment in the show. And it's when, Phoebe, who's played by Lauren Worsham, is singing to Monty, who is wooing her. And she's singing about how she wished that we all lived in a world where you could see people for who they really were, meaning that she wished we all lived inside out, where because we all see what's on the surface. We don't necessarily see what's on the inside. So she wished that you could immediately see on the inside, so you didn't have the unpleasant awakening later on. And of course, she doesn't realize that, spoiler alert, that Monty, who she's singing to, is basically been killing off members of her family in order to attain his inheritance. I like interesting lyrics, and I like the way that they weave in and out all the opposites, because they juxtapose inside out and outside in, and black and white and white and black and night and day. And it's all a lot of opposites, but it's blended really, really nice. And Monty, Bryce Pinkham, joins in towards the end and sings with her. And I also really love Lauren Worsham's vocals.
She's an incredible performer.
Fantastic singer.
And the fact that she can do this and then turn around, she also is
she's a rock
person for a rock band called Sky Pony. Like,
I know
she can do it all.
Well, but you can hear it in the song, because there's a couple moments in the song where she's doing the real heavy duty operatic soprano stuff, but then she gets into this kind of squeaky little girly voice, mm-hmm. and goes right back up into the soprano stuff. And you can hear the versatility that she's got in certain moments. So this song has always really stuck out to me, because it's one of the, and again, it's, I hate to say it, it's sort of like the flower drum song thing. It's the one moment in the show where the silly lighthearted stuff stops, and you have a little bit more of a serious moment, but they're still relatively clever and smart about the way the song's written. It's not It's not a sappy, because a lot of times you see really, really funny shows and they think, oh, we've got to stick in a love ballad or we've got to stick in some sort of serious song. And it's a by the numbers cut and paste kind of song that's just doesn't really do anything. It's just kind of in there because they felt they needed something. Whereas this feels like part of the same show. It feels like it's part of the same score because it's still smart. It's still a smartly clever song, but it's serving a totally different purpose in the score than being funny and silly. And that's why the song really jumped out at me. And I love it. I listened to it. Whenever I played the album originally, I always backtracked to hear this one again, because again, Laura Marsham's vocals are just gorgeous. And I really like the way they weave the in and out, inside out, outside in, all that stuff. So that's why I picked it.
All right. Well, let's give it a listen.
Shell itself is unassuming, but look inside, you'll find a pearl. The man who otherwise is unpresuming may share the same blood as an earl. Do not dismiss a woman of position. She can be tender-hearted, I've no doubt. The world would be in awfully good condition if we could all inside out. The belladonna is my favorite flower. I love its shape and its perfume. You'd likely join the angels in an hour should you ingest its rather deadly bloom. The man who seems a paragon of virtue may be a scoundrel versed in sin. There would be many fewer who could hurt you if we could all live outside in. And everyone you'd meet on any London street, if they be sweet or horrid, it would show. I would be overjoyed, the heartache I'd avoid, if I could look at you and know. And when I meet the man for whom I'm fated, I know the one I've waited for is he. For he will find these wealthy trappings overrated, and he will see what no one sees in me. A girl who reads the classics.
Outside in, the change in how we see would be immense.
If we lived right side left,
or even left side right,
back side front,
or front side back, would shed a better light. Black might just be white. Day might just be night. If we knew the truth about each other, untied,
the world might just make sense.
That was Lauren Worsham and Bryce Pinkham singing Inside Out from A Gentleman's Guide to Love and Murder by Stephen Lutback and Robert L. Friedman, who I hope we get some new stuff from soon. I do too. Loved, you know, this show was not a show for David, although I did see it twice because I liked it enough to want to sort of dive in to really get to know it better. But I really appreciated their craft and would love to see more from them. So I hope we do. Now, a show that is very much for David is your next choice. And you know, if we were to just talk about sort of the greatest songs to come out of Broadway musicals of this century, this would undoubtedly be near the top of everyone's list, I think. So why don't you tell us about it?
It is from Grey Gardens by Scott Frankel and Michael Corey. And I picked Another Winter in a Summer Town, which I guess you could call this an 11 o'clock number.
I think so.
Yeah. I mean, there's a little bit more in the show after this. Not a lot, but there's a little bit more in the show after this. It's not the show itself. I didn't love, I mean, I liked the show. I liked the score better than I liked the show. And as I said earlier, I really love imagery when it comes to lyrics. And I think the whole concept of the song is so full of wonderful imagery, as she, especially at the beginning of the song, where she talks about a clearly seaside summery town converting to a winter setting with things shutting down and folding up. And in reality, it's she's really talking about the fact that she's no longer this teenage girl, and she's now this middle-aged woman who's basically trapped, trapped in this house. And she's no longer she's no longer a summer town, basically. And it comes, just so people know the placement, it comes right at the end of the, towards the end of the show. And little Edie, played by Christine Ebersole, in amazing voice, as you will hear, is finally determined that she's going to leave. And she has packed her bags and is making for the front gate. And is singing, and because she's determined to finally get out from under the grasp of her mother and to get out of Grey Gardens, the house. But at the end, her mother calls for her, and you see this kind of look of despair on her face, and she gets this realization that she's never going to really be able to leave, and turns around and goes back in. And that's towards the end of the song. There's at the end of the song, you're going to hear her say, oh God, oh God, my God. And I will tell you that when I saw the show on Broadway, first off, you could hear a pin drop during the song. And when she got to that, my God, at the end of the song, you could hear people sobbing in the audience because you are so with her wanting to finally get out and to get out into the world, that when she gives up or kind of caves in and goes back, you just feel so much despair and sadness for her. And I got to tell you, I cannot listen to this song without having the emotions well up. And it's not just the way the song is written, because it's so beautifully written.
Well, but her performance.
It's the performance. I mean, when you hear her do that, oh God, my God, at the end, Ebersole is going to rip your heart out at the end, because you feel so much for her character at this point. And it comes across just in the recording. It's just one of those moments in theater that you just don't forget. And I've seen other productions of the show without Ebersole. Didn't work. Didn't have the same impact, unfortunately. It just didn't. So that's kind of why I picked the song. It's one of those ones that you just don't forget. And it's also one of those ones, like I said, if it's a song that I can listen to again this many years later and still have the same emotional reaction to the song, that tells me something.
Absolutely. Well, grab a hanky, folks, because we're going to listen to Another Winter in a Summer Town from Grey Gardens.
Renters go home.
The maple goes from crimson to brown. Oh God, my God, another winter in a summer town. The beach is empty, they cover the pool. Patio umbrellas come down. Oh God, my God, another winter in a summer town. One little leaf adrift in the breeze refuses to fall. Blown by the wind, it clings to the trees, unwilling to wither and die. The summer's over, but I'm still a girl, cavorting in my carnival crown. From blossom to blossom, I buzz like a bee, then glance in the mirror, and who do I see? A middle-aged woman inhabiting me. Because it's winter in a summer
So your last two choices both
are very similar.
They are. And that's why I want to sort of talk about them together, because they bring us back to sort of the moment when Broadway was evolving from, you know, what it was in the 30s to what it would be in the 40s. Mm-hmm. The first one is the later of the two songs and really is interesting because It comes from a show that we think of as a musical, but is really a play with music. And mm-hmm. the song exists in the show as a song. So it's not really doing the work of a show tune in the sense of mm-hmm. of needing to be connected to character in its music and lyrics, but it's connected to character and its significance.
Right.
And I think that's also more or less true of the second song you chose, even though it's from half a generation earlier, same generation of songwriters, but half a generation earlier of thinking about how songs should be written. So why don't you tell us about these two songs?
Well, these are two that have always been on my list. Mm-hmm. Even 12 years ago, whenever I first wrote the list, these two have always been on my list. They fit to me what I really love. First off, they're both songs that over the years, one more than the other, have really become standards. They're both short songs. They're both very simple songs. They're both written by very, very renowned songwriters. And they fit to me what I look for in songs that always stick with me. And that's the simplicity of the songs. They're both very simple songs. And the lyrics, again, are not overworked. The first one we're going to hear is My Ship from Lady in the Dark by Kurt Vile and Ira Gershwin. And David's right. The role it plays in the show is obviously the show is about successful magazine editor Liza Elliott, who's kind of struggling with all this indecision in her life, whether it's professional or her romantic life. And she's seeing a psychiatrist, which was kind of a breakthrough in early 1940s musicals. And there's all these dream sequences, but kind of throughout the show, there's this musical theme that keeps coming back to her and she doesn't really remember what it's from and whatever. And ultimately at the end of the show, spoiler alert, we discover that it's a song from her childhood, which is this song, which is My Ship. And what I love about it is, that, as I said multiple times already, I love lyrics that are full of imagery. But this one is a combination of imagery and simplicity, because she sings about the ship has sails that are made of silk, the decks are gold. She talks about pearls and jams and spices. And there's all this very descriptive, beautiful imagery about the ship. But she also, the whole point of the song is that no matter how beautiful the ship is, that when it comes sailing in, if it doesn't hold her true love, if her true love is not on that ship, then it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how beautiful the ship is if it doesn't have her one true love on the ship. It's just that simplicity of no matter how much you paint up this, it's really all about that individual person you love and not the dressing around it. And that also holds true for the second song we're going to hear. I don't know if we want to play them together back to back.
Yeah, I think so.
Which we can, because it's also very similar. It's a kind of a similar concept. And that is My Romance by Rodgers and Hart from the musical Jumbo, which is kind of the same thing, except, I mean, this one takes a little bit more of a direct approach. And one of the things I love about it is that it's sort of Lorenz Hart, as we said earlier. This isn't a sad song from Lorenz Hart, but in some ways, I've always heard it as Lorenz Hart thumbing his nose at songwriters who write sappy love songs.
Absolutely.
Because he sits there and says, my romance doesn't need a castle in Spain. It doesn't need the moon. It doesn't need all that other nonsense that all these other songwriters are telling you need in a love song or a song about romance. All my romance needs is you. You know, it doesn't need all the fancy dressing, sort of like My Ship doesn't need the fancy gold and silk ship. It just needs the one person who's on that ship.
And, you know, both of these songs are very simple songs, sung very straightforwardly. Mm-hmm. In musicals that have circus extravaganza.
Exactly. Exactly. That's what I mean. And that's why these two songs have always stuck with me. I mean, they're not very long songs. I mean, the version of My Romance we're going to hear is actually a little bit extended. It's not as short as it usually is. But they're short little songs, but they're so beautifully written and they're so simple and to the point and they really they speak to the listener and they get the message across with such an economy of lyrics, which is what I love, and still use. I love the fact that they pull you in with all the imagery you're expecting from this kind of song, and then basically telling you, you don't need all this imagery. It's not what this is really about. Love and romance is not all about the spectacle and imagery, especially the fact that we just showed you all the circus stuff in both of our musicals, Lady in the Dark and Jumbo. What it's really all about is finding your one true love and finding you. You know, I just need you. I don't need the castles in Spain and the moon and all that kind of stuff. I just need you. That's all it's about. And so that's why these songs have always been on my list, because they're so simple and so beautifully written. And the melodies, oh my God, My Romance has got one of the most beautiful melodies by Richard Rodgers. It's gorgeous. So anyway, so we're going to hear the version of My Ship I picked is from the 1997 Royal National Theatre cast recording with Maria Friedman. That's probably the most complete recording of Lady in the Dark we have. And then then we're going to hear My Romance from Rodgers and Hart. And we're going to hear one of my favorite singers from the 1940s, Joe Stafford, along with Paul Weston and his orchestra singing My Romance.
My romance doesn't need a blue lagoon standing by. No month of May, no twinkling stars, no my romance doesn't need a castle rising in Spain, nor a dance to a constantly surprising refrain. Wide awake, I can make my most fantastic dreams come true. My romance doesn't need a thing but you. Constantly surprising refrain. Wide awake, I can make my most fantastic dreams come true.
Well, we have come to the end of your list. So I guess we've come to the end of the episode. Thank you so much for inviting me along on this
I'm so glad you were able to do this. I was thinking, well, I could do this by myself, but it would be a little egotistical for me to host my my own 12 favorite show tunes. Plus, I really wanted you, because one, you and I go so far back. We go back way before this actual iteration of this radio show. Plus the fact that you and I don't always agree on everything. And I wanted someone who was going to like ask me pointed questions.
Yeah.
Did you pick this song?
There are some songs here that I don't necessarily love. There are no songs here that I'm like, that song is garbage. Right. But even if there were,
right.
I know how to appreciate a song for what it is and what it wants to be.
Right. So David, I really appreciate you taking the time to host the show for me. So
anytime.
So now, get out of here. You're never doing this again. I want my show back.
You can have it.
I'm just kidding. But thank you for helping me celebrate 800 episodes. Very exciting.
Congratulations. What an achievement.
Thank you so much. And listeners, I will be back next week for another Broadway radio show, episode 801. So come back.